Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, Kung Fu Panda 4, and some other movies and shows like Taskmaster, the completely made-up adventures of Dick Turpin, and The Last Man on Earth, the movie from 1964, not that show with Will Forte in it. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring a blind spot that I've had for many, many years that I'm very ashamed of that I will cover later in the show. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on social media elsewhere, you can find me at Kevin Carr and as Fat Guys at the Movies.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's quickly look at the box office from last weekend. Dune Part 2 did very, very well. It made $82.5 million for the weekend, which is the highest grossing opening weekend since the Taylor Swift concert tour movie came out in October. That's really quite good. I mean, also, Five Nights at Freddy's did pretty well. It was in the 70 millions, but this was still higher than that. And one of the things that I think is an interesting takeaway of it, you've seen a lot of people report and saying, oh, it was double what the first movie. Well, the first one came out in 2021. We were still knee-deep in COVID, and there were a lot of people not going to the theaters, and that opened as a hybrid release on HBO. So, like, the $40-some million that did 2.5 years ago was still very impressive, but it's not like it just all this interest jumped and doubled. The other thing that I found interesting about it is when you dig down into the data, about half of the tickets sold were for premium large format theaters, stuff like IMAX or Ultra Screen or any of the, it's not just IMAX, but basically that IMAX experience. And those are inflated ticket prices. So what's interesting is actually there were fewer ticket buyers for an $82 million opening than, say, Five Nights at Freddy's, which was all mostly just regular theaters. And more people went and saw Five Nights at Freddy's its opening weekend then saw Dune Part 2. That's not to slag on Dune Part 2, but it shows how ticket prices can affect it. Same thing when we come to the end of this weekend and we look at the numbers for like Kung Fu Panda 4, you got to realize a lot of those tickets are kids' tickets, which are cheaper. So the number, gross number, doesn't always match the ticketing. But still, very good for Dune Part 2. But I mean, is it going to make $1 billion? I don't know. Let's see what the staying power is. The next piece I want to hit really quickly is the Rust verdict came in, not for Alec Baldwin, but for Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, who was the armorer on the movie, and she was up for manslaughter charges because she's the one who loaded the gun and handed it to Alec Baldwin, or provided it to Alec Baldwin through the first AD for him to have on set, and that's the gun that discharged and ended up killing the cinematographer and injuring the director. She was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter, as she should have been. And she's really the only one who should get that, because I know there's all these people going, well, he's the one who pulled the trigger. If you're handed a gun in an operational movie set and you're told it's a cold gun, it is a prop. It is not a gun. And all that pretentious, well, I've handled guns ever since I was a kid kind of nonsense does not mean that he should have treated it as a gun. It's the armorer's job to load and handle the weaponry, and she failed at it catastrophically. There shouldn't even have been live rounds anywhere on that set or anywhere in her assemblance of weaponry. You don't bring in that stuff. So the failure was on her part, and she rightfully so has been convicted. The only way that I think, I know there's a lot of people out there like, oh, I hate Alec Baldwin. Justice is not about whether you like a person or not. Justice is not about whether you agree with their politics. Justice is about justice. And Alec Baldwin, there's a certain amount of culpability I think he has as a producer, but I don't think you're going to get to the threshold of criminal manslaughter charges. The final piece of news, and this is just a little more personal, I just want to let people know, I've announced this on social media. I put it out on Facebook and on Twitter and Blue Sky and Mastodon. But I am going to be stepping back as host of Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm going to be stepping down from my throne, my royal throne in the magical studio in the sky. There's reasons for this, and a lot of them are personal. There's nothing bad. It's just time for that to happen. And my last show is going to be the weekend of March 29th. So you've got me for a couple weeks, but you're not going to get rid of me that easily, even though I won't be doing the weekly show, and you won't be getting that weekly hour-long podcast or find me on the radio. There should be a replacement show for the radio stations. I'm not involved in that process, so you'll have to check your local listings for wherever you're hearing this, if you're hearing it through the air. If you still want to follow my movie reviews, I'm still going to be putting movie reviews up on the Fat Guys at the Movie site, and I'm going to be doing stuff on TikTok and Instagram. I'm probably going to resurrect that. You can find both of those under Fat Guys at the Movies. And you can still follow me on social media. I mentioned it before, facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, twitter.com/KevinCarr, Blue Sky and Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr. So I just like to say it's been an honor for all these years to be talking in your ears about movies and my own little genre interests, everything from Doctor Who to 80s horror films. It has been a real honor to be on the radio for this long and to have such a dedicated audience. And I do hope everybody stays in touch. You know, even the ones that don't like me, even the ones who disagree with me. It's wonderful that I have people out there that I can talk to. And I've met some amazing people through this. I've met some great listeners over the years. And I hope that if you want to keep in touch with me, I'm going to be out there. So you can follow me. I will still have the Fat Guys at the Movies website on, and you can reach me anytime through that, and I'll have all the connection info there, and you can hear my movie reviews and any other updates in my life going on then. But you've still got me for 3 more weeks after this. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer is for a documentary that's coming to Apple TV+. It's called Steve Martin, a documentary in two pieces. And it comes to Apple TV+ on March 29th.
He's the most idolized comedian ever.
He reinvented stand-up.
It was a cultural phenomenon.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
I am a wild.
What he was doing was unique. It was chancy.
I always thought of him as the door out of the 60s. You could be silly again.
All comedy was political. And I felt that it was time to change that.
I was born at a time that he was already like an established comedian before I was paying attention. You know, he kind of really came into play in the 70s, early 70s. And I wasn't old enough to be able to watch his stuff. But it wasn't until the 80s that I really learned to appreciate Steve Martin. And so even though I grew up with Steve Martin as a celebrity comic, I did not experience him in his sort of rawest form in the 70s. But I mean, I remember as kids, the whole King Tut thing was hilarious. I love that bit. It's the most absurdly silly, weird stuff. And that's, I think, where they're going with this documentary, sort of analyzing his comedic style back in the 70s and why it worked, especially coming out of the 60s. So I'm curious about this one. I may have to check this one out on Apple TV+. And the next one I want to talk about is The Wild Robot, which comes to theaters September 20th.
Sometimes to survive, we must become more than we were programmed to be.
I know there's not a whole lot of dialogue in this movie because it's about a robot interacting with an alien world and alien life forms, and they don't speak English. But apparently, Lupita Nyong'o plays the robot. She plays the voice. And I'm a big fan of her, so I'm looking forward to this one. This looks like it's just a beautiful story. And it's funny because my wife, who's an elementary school teacher, said to me, she's like, "What if you ever get a screening for The Wild Robot, I want to see it." I'm like, okay. And because she like reads the book with her class all the time. So, yeah, this looks like it's going to be a really eye-opening movie. And that comes to theater September 20th. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about my Oscar predictions and then review the completely made-up adventures of Dick Turpin.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Before we jump into the movie reviews, I want to talk about the Oscars. The Oscars are this weekend. They're Sunday night. If you're listening to this after Sunday night, then you'll either think I'm a genius or I'm just picking the best odds. Because I'm going to give you my Oscar picks. These are who I think is going to win, not who I think should win. That's a whole nother discussion. But let's start off with my just overall feelings of what's going to happen. I actually think this is going to be one of the most boring Oscar shows ever. If you look at what's happened with the Golden Globes and some other shows and award season this year, it's been pretty low key. I mean, even the Golden Globes, I remember there was a time with the Golden Globes where they get like a really controversial comedian like Ricky Gervais to give the opening remarks, and he'd do things that would be like, oh, how dare he offend these people. And when the worst thing we got was a flubbed joke by Joe Coy about Taylor Swift, and that's what caused all the outrage. So even the Golden Globes, you used to have all the people get hammered and come up on stage, and like Emma Thompson once was accepting an award and she had her shoes off. She had she was holding her high heels in her hand and another. She's completely plastered and she was giving her speech. That's the old school Golden Globes. They kind of cleaned it up this year. But I think that's what's just going to happen this year. It's sort of like when Schindler's List was up for an Oscar. People are like, we can't make fun of Schindler's List. And also we got Jimmy Kimmel hosting again. And I'm not a huge fan of Jimmy Kimmel myself, but I also think he's the most non-offensive comedian. I mean, I'm sure there's people that don't like him, and I know he has a political bent that some people don't like. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about doing outrageous things. I do not think we're going to get an Oscar slap like what happened with Will Smith and Chris Rock a couple years ago. I don't think that kind of stuff's going to happen. We're not going to get a flub like the reading of the wrong name for Best Picture, like what happened with Moonlight and La La Land. And we're not going to get a streaker, although it'd be great if like all three of those happened in one segment. But this thing is going to be kind of boring. It's going to be very run-of-the-mill. Part of it is I think it's very telegraphed. We all know who's going to win. It's Oppenheimer's night. I'm not a big Oppenheimer fan at all, but I think it's not going to sweep. I don't think it's going to win every single award it's up for. It's certainly going to win a lot of the technical awards. But the big ones that people care about, it's going to win Best Picture. I don't think anything else is going to win Best Picture. And I think Christopher Nolan's going to get his Oscar, and he's going to get up there and be all pretentious. And all of the Christopher Nolan fanboys are going to be like, oh, my God, he's the greatest thing ever. That's the director picture sweep. We're not going to get any surprises there. And then I also think the actors are both going to be from Oppenheimer. I think Cillian Murphy's going to get it. It's a great performance, even though I wasn't a big fan of the movie. It's a great performance. And Robert Downey Jr. is also going to get it for Best Supporting Actor, who also gives a commanding and very good performance. You know, like, for Best Actor, sure. I know that Paul Giamatti is a favorite, and he certainly is the runner-up. But there is, especially in the Best Actor, Best Actress categories, there is generally a bias for dramatic roles over comedic roles. And even though Paul Giamatti does a pretty dramatic turn in The Holdovers, it's going to go to Cillian Murphy. Now, let me skip Best Actors here for a second. I'll talk about Best Supporting Actress. I think that's odds-on favorite, Divine Joy Randolph. I think she was great in The Holdovers. Like I said, there's a bias towards the Best Actors and Actress being drama, but Best Supporting Actor and Actress can get the comedies pretty easy. That's not uncommon for that to happen. And even though Emily Blunt is nominated for Oppenheimer, I really don't think her performance was that strong. And honestly, I think there's a lot of people that are like, oh yeah, she was nominated, wasn't she? And no, America Ferrera is not going to win. I'm sorry, Barbie fangirls out there. Now, when it comes to Best Actress, I think that's the biggest horse race we've got, because you've got Lily Gladstone, I think, she'll probably win. She's the odds-on favorite. But Emma Stone's up there. And the thing with Poor Things is even though it's, I guess, categorized as a comedy, it's not a comedy. I would not, it has comedic elements, but I would consider that more of a dark drama than anything. But I think the momentum recently has really been for Lily Gladstone. And I'd love to see her win, because I think that movie needs a little bit of attention. Now, Barbie's not going to get shut out. I think Billie Eilish is going to win for her song that she did, What Was I Made For? And I think right now it's between Poor Things and Barbie for a couple of these, like production design and costume design. And both of them are great movies for that. If I were to hazard a guess, I would say Barbie's a better favorite of that, just because of the voting body seems to be more accepting of Barbie than Poor Things. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews now and start with the TV series, which is on Apple TV Plus, and that is The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin. Noel Fielding leads a gang of legendary highwaymen as a completely fabricated outlaw based on a real one.
I know what you're thinking. Who is this guy with the incredible cheekbones? Where does he get his hair done? One day, I'll be the most famous highwayman in all of England.
You are literally about to be hanged, you idiot!
You've probably heard of me, Dick Turpin.
Highwaymen murder and rob. You're not a highwayman, Dick.
I've seen you prancing around in your funny shirt.
I'm new school, and there's going to be less violence on my watch. Is there anything that I could have done to improve your highway robbery experience?
I'll be honest, I didn't know that Dick Turpin was a real person until I looked it up for writing the show notes. And I haven't seen the whole series. I've only seen a couple episodes. If you don't know who Noel Fielding is, probably the best and most recognizable thing he's done for people here on this side of the pond is he's on the Great British Baking Show, which recently had its seasons drop on Netflix. He's there with Matt Lucas. He's the one who talks like this and, you know, a little bit softer, you know, and he kind of has that, he has that cherubic face and that mod haircut. He goes all the way back to British comedy, going back well into the 2000s and even earlier. He was on the IT Crowd, one of my favorite shows of all time. He played Richmond. He was a goth who was hiding in the basement of the IT department. And he was also in The Mighty Boosh. If you don't know what The Mighty Boosh is, it was this weird little existential comedic TV show in Britain. About, it started out as these people who worked at a zoo, and it was just these weird, wacky adventures. And but they got like really like at times, you know, psychedelic and existential, almost like, you know, spiritual with some of their jokes. But their stuff was absurd. I mean, like existentially absurd. And one of the things I heard people talking about the Dick Turpin show and saying, well, this kind of brings that Mighty Boosh feel to it. And it does, because there's a lot of familiar faces. A lot of the people who worked on the Mighty Boosh are on this as well. But ultimately, it's a more pragmatic show, basically about this guy who stumbles into being a highwayman. If you don't know what a highwayman is, it's a thief. It's an outlaw. It's basically somebody in the 17th, 18th century who would rob coaches, you know, that kind of thing. Robin Hood. And he sort of stumbles into it and becomes the leader of this gang and sort of has these legendary adventures that aren't really real. I mean, Dick Turpin was a real guy, and I guess his stuff was embellished in the years. But it's irreverent, and it's silly. It's very dry at times. It's, again, a who's who of British comedy, because you got a lot of people you've seen in other British shows, not just The Mighty Boosh, but everything from The Windsors to The Inbetweeners. And I really enjoyed it simply because I like Noel Fielding's comedy, and I like that delivery, and it's a silliness, and it's very much of a lark. I mean, it's whimsical and fun, and Fielding brings his Mighty Boosh energy to the 18th century to kind of stir things up. I mean, it's cute. It's not for everybody. It's very, very British. But if you enjoy that sort of thing, you can check it out on Apple TV Plus. I'm going to say The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Kung Fu Panda 4 and Taskmaster. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about the big movie for the weekend, the one that's going up against Dune. What I think is going to be interesting, this is my actual prediction, between Kung Fu Panda 4 and Dune. Dune will have a higher gross. There will have been more money laid down to go see Dune Part 2 this weekend. But Kung Fu Panda will win in ticket numbers. I will bet you that Kung Fu Panda is going to have a lot more tickets sold, because not only does Dune have the high premium, large format cinema, sometimes almost twice as much. That's like some $25 to go see a PLF screen. Whereas Kung Fu Panda is going to be just nothing but matinee shows and kid shows. And so they're going to sell a lot of tickets to Kung Fu Panda, but the tickets are cheaper. if you did a 1-to-1 ticket number comparison, Kung Fu Panda will probably win, because there's no other movie really that's out there for kids. I mean, you have Migration has run its course. People are dying to get new kids of content out there. Anyway, in Kung Fu Panda 4, Po must face his greatest threat, a sorcerer chameleon who can embody the power of any warrior.
It is time to take the next step on your journey.
I'm not going to be the dragon warrior anymore.
You will advance to spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace.
Inner peace.
Who's that?
The most powerful shape-shifting sorceress, the chameleon.
How do I find this? The chameleon. What is this place?
The best crooks and criminals live here.
You're a wanted criminal?
You sound surprised. Is it surprising?
Silence makes our tummies tingle.
Going back to 2008, when Kung Fu Panda, the first one, came out. Yeah, 2008. If you had a baby when you saw Kung Fu Panda, they can drive now. Anyways, when Kung Fu Panda came out 16 years ago, I thought it was going to be the worst pile of garbage in the world. I just thought it was going to be terrible. And then it came out and I watched it and I'm like, this is actually a great little movie. It was like one of my top 10 movies of that year. Now, admittedly, it's all kind of one joke. Chubby, doughy panda becomes this warrior, you know, and I felt for Po. I mean, I'm a little bit chubby myself. I'll roll down a hill as much as Po will. And then, you know, the second one wasn't bad. The third one was stretching a bit. So now they've got the fourth one, and it's like a Shrek movie or the Ice Age movies. They're just going to keep making them until they stop making money. And what's interesting, I saw the budget for this is like 80-some million dollars, which is pretty low for one of these animated films. So it's fine. It's fine. It's not a great movie. It certainly doesn't have the oomph and the power of the first one. It doesn't have the uniqueness and the freshness of the first movie. But one of the things that happens when you get these animated films, and you saw this with Ice Age, you see this with Despicable Me, every episode they have, every movie they have, they pick up some more characters. Ice Age and Madagascar were the ones that were most indicative of, really, Ice Age. Ice Age just started on with this handful of characters. And then they just kept adding more. So by the time you got to the fifth movie, they had a dozen characters, and they had to have a story arc for each one. And so the story gets really weirdly crowded. And you know, like in one of the Ice Age movies, Diego, who was the saber-tooth cat, his arc was really lame. But they had to give him something because they're like, well, they had those three characters from Ice Age originally. You can't get rid of that guy. And so Kung Fu Panda 4 suffers a bit from that. But ultimately, though, the characters that they really kind of carry along with them, aside from Po, is his father, his biological father, played by Bryan Cranston, who's another panda, obviously, and his adoptive father, this goose who makes noodles, played by James Hong. And the two of them actually have some really good chemistry, and they kind of pair them off, and even though they do get an unnecessary side story, they're fun enough in it. Now, one of the things that happens in this movie is you've got Awkwafina playing like his sort of pseudo-sidekick in this. And she's just overexposed. Part of the thing is she shows up in anything that has any sort of Chinese ethnic background, and any movie that has that, she's in there somewhere. You know, whether it's Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, it could be that dragon movie that they did, Raya and the Last Dragon. It was just, she shows up in everything. And then she shows up in stuff that isn't even that. Like, I'm just getting kind of annoyed with her. And, you know, I think I hit my limit with her in the Little Mermaid movie. And so this one, she's just as annoying. Oh, no, she's not that annoying. She's not as annoying as Scuttle. But, I mean, overall, it's cute. The premise is getting a little thin, and I know it's a movie about a panda that does kung fu. But, I mean, look, at this point, you get your hero's journey, have your hero's journey, and move on. But they keep trying to retread the story, and it's holding together, but I don't know how many more of these are going to make. I mean, the series is running out of steam, but the energy of the cast keeps this one going. I mean, it's certainly Jack Black brings a lot of energy to it. And that's, honestly, without Jack Black, even if you got the voice sounding guy who does the DreamWorks TV series, it wouldn't be the same. Jack Black is what makes this movie, and some really good animation too, on a budget, under $100 million. So I'm going to have to say Kung Fu Panda kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Taskmaster. Let me just play the trailer, and then I'll talk about how I got to this. This UK game show pits five comedians against another as they compete with absurd tasks.
I am the Taskmaster, and it goes without saying that I'm the most powerful entertainer on the planet.
Hence all the silly lightning and stairs and stuff, which isn't in the show.
However, in the show, I'll be using my real power to set needy comedians tasks like... Who can paint the best picture of a horse while riding a horse? Who can eat the most of a watermelon in 1 minute? Your task is to watch the show.
What do I do?
Admin. Basic.
Where I stumbled onto this is last week I mentioned to a radio show host that Dick Turpin show, and I mentioned Noel Fielding. And this guy, who I wasn't expecting to know who he is, because it's a pretty niche market to know who he is, and he's like, oh no, I know him, he's on Taskmaster. And I'm like, oh, I most people know him from the Great British Baking Show, but okay, sure. And then he starts telling me about Taskmaster, and I've never seen it. I generally don't watch game shows and reality TV. And he's like, oh, no, no, it's very, very funny. And it's funny because my son watches it, too, and he's a huge fan. It's started by Greg Davies, who, if you don't know who he is, he was in The Inbetweeners. He was on shows like Cuckoo and Man Down. He is this very, very large, mean, tall comedian. And he's a, let's just say he's a strong-looking face. You know, I wouldn't call him handsome, but he's imposing. But he's very funny, and he's the Taskmaster, and he takes these five comedians, and each season's like five episodes long. I think they expand it to 10 in later episodes. I've only watched like two seasons, but he takes these five comedians and gives them each the same task at different times, and then they compete to see who does it best or who does it quickest. And it's very, very funny because you also rely on the comedians, first of all, doing some insane things. Like they mentioned in the trailer, one of them is who can paint the best picture of a horse whilst riding a horse. And then they have things that sometimes uses lateral sit thinking. You have to figure out how to do something with, you know, sort of like read the tasks and figure out what they don't say and what they do say. Like one of them is they're given a pineapple and they say they have something like 20 minutes to conceal that pineapple everywhere on their body. And then the assistant comes in and has to guess where it is, and whoever gets the most wrong guesses wins because they've effectively concealed it. And it's absurd. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it is very funny. And I've totally gotten behind this. Now, where I found it, I know you can buy episodes on like Prime and probably Apple TV Plus. Well, really anywhere you can, you know, buy stuff, you know, like Vudu or any other place like that. But I found it on Pluto. If you have the Pluto TV app, which is a free app, now it's going to be loaded with advertising. You just got to deal with that. They drop about six or seven commercials in every 10 or 15 minutes. But it's like watching it on syndication. But when you launch Pluto, it puts you into their autoplay section, and then you got to go to the home and you do a search and you can find it, and then you can just watch the individual episodes. It is a scream. It is so funny, and it's very relaxing because it's a completely mindless show, but it's very fun. It's a hilarious journey through some of the most insane obstacles with a rotating cast of clever contestants because they change out the comedians every year. So they get five new comedians for every 5 to 10 episodes. Very, very funny. Totally rocks. I highly recommend it.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about The Last Man on Earth and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring my special blind spot. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews, and I'm going to talk about The Last Man on Earth. Stars Vincent Price as a lone scientist after a plague has turned humans into vampires or zombies or whatever.
Vampires, alive among the lifeless, that make the night hideous with their inhuman cravings. If they are not destroyed in the flaming pits of hellfire, or staked to the ground in the light of the sun, will the unbelievable become real? A world of inanimate zombies by day? Irresistible, horrifying attackers by night? Can a zombie woman's hunger for love repopulate the earth?
If you listen to that trailer, at first they start calling them vampires, and then, like, at the end of the trailer, they're referring to them as zombies. These are the same characters. Vampires and zombies are quite different. They're very, very different creatures. Zombies are reanimated dead. This sort of, they walk around. Even if you go to the old school, like, voodoo zombies from, like, White Zombie or something like that, they're the walking dead, or the basically hypnotized drones or slaves. And then, of course, the modern zombies is ones that have been raised from the dead and then eat the flesh and the brains of the living. Vampires are the undead who can turn into bats and drink your blood. I mean, they're very, very... Oh, yeah, there's just a little bit of undead connective tissue there. But what's funny is this is based on the book by Richard Matheson, which I've read. And this is actually strangely close to it. Of all the adaptations, this is closest. Then the other adaptations, they did The Omega Man with Charlton Heston in the 70s, which is insane because it's got this jive turkey kind of angle to it because, like, the woman he ends up connecting with, and it looked like she had auditioned for Pam Grier's roles in, like, Coffee. And, like, all the bad vampires are sort of like these voodoo disco vampires. I mean, it's all done with this virile 70s flair to it, and it's not a great movie. It's fun to watch Charlton Heston chew through the scenery, but that's about it. Then, of course, they made... very well-known, I Am Legend, which is the name of the original book. And that stars Will Smith. And I Am Legend got a bit of a resurgence during COVID because it was about a plague that wiped out the world. So a lot of people watched. I ended up rewatching it around that time. And what's weird is this is probably the most faithful adaptation. I've seen this movie a couple times before. And the last time I watched it, it was on Riff Trax. And if you got a Riff Trax Friends account, you can access that movie. And it's very, very funny because really the movie itself, even though it has Vincent Price, it's Vincent Price literally phoning in his lines in some scenes. And look, I don't blame Vincent Price, but this was in the 60s. So he had kind of his heyday of the 50s and late, you know, mid and late 50s was kind of waning a little bit. And so he was taking a lot of smaller roles. And it's not like this was a tiny role. It at times feels big because it has him going around in the deserted cities, but a lot of it is him just wandering around his lab, you know, making coffee, talking into a tape recorder, occasionally remembering what happened before the plague. So it's not Vincent Price's best work out there, but you know, he still throws down for it. But it is most entertaining if you watch the Riff Trax version of it. I'm a huge Vincent Price fan, but I will absolutely admit it's not one of his best ones. You know, like, he had already started doing the gimmicky movies by the late 50s, you know, like House on Haunted Hill. And I have to say, it's not the best movie, but... And it's one of those... I think it's actually in public domain. I think you can probably find it anywhere if you want to watch the unriffed version. But, you know, somewhat faithful adaptation of Richard Matheson's I Am Legend, but... it just drags to a crawl with a nameless script. So as much as I love Vincent Price, and as much as I appreciate Richard Matheson and his original story, I'm going to have to say this kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. There's a blind spot that I've had. And I'm surprised I've had it for as long as I have. Everybody has their blind spots in films, you know, even if you're a completist. And there's just, like, always a film you've never quite gotten to. And as many of you know, one of the greatest actors in genre films ever is and was Tom Atkins. And I made it my mission to see this because I was watching an episode of the new Mystery Science Theater, the most recent season. And it was the Halloween episode, and Jonah Heston picks his Halloween costume to be Tom Atkins. And he just wears a trench coat, and he puts on a mustache. He doesn't even put on a good mustache. It's a darker mustache. The mustache is not the right color for Tom Atkins. Because even in his younger days, he had sort of like a strawberry blonde kind of mustache, and he had just a dark mustache. You know, by the time you get to the late 80s, which is when this movie I'm going to be talking about, he's got almost a white mustache. But my sister had seen the episode before, and she had told me, you're going to love this episode, and I won't tell you why. And when I saw it, I what was so funny about it is when he said, oh, yeah, no, I'm dressed as Tom Atkins. And then he rattled off Tom Atkins' filmography almost in the exact same order that I would have. I mean, he's like, well, yeah, Tom Atkins, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, and the Fog, and Night of the Creeps. And then he mentions this movie, Maniac Cop, which I knew he was in. But I'd never seen Maniac Cop. I am embarrassed to say that I hadn't seen it up until now. I mean, it was in 1988 was when it came out. I should have been able to see that in the theaters. It probably just came and went before I got around to it. So I made it my mission this week to go check it out. And so let's talk about Maniac Cop. A killer dressed as a police officer in New York City is chased down by a troubled beat cop and a grizzled detective.
Officer! Oh, thank God I'm here!
You really think a cop did this?
Why not?
Would you automatically assume that it was a police officer instead of some lunatic dressed up like a cop?
Spice squad.
He'll kill again. He enjoys killing.
He strikes without cause, without mercy.
You may be getting information from inside the department.
That means he is one of us.
You see a cop, you cross to the other side of the street.
Now, the basic story is there is this killer going around. It's played by Robert Zahr. If you're familiar with the Mystery Science Theater movies, there was this movie called Soul Taker that starred Joe Estevez that was in like the 7th, 8th, or 9th season. And Robert Zahr, you'd recognize him. He was also in Tango and Cash, had a condition that made his jawline very, very large. He had blonde hair, and he was a tall guy, and he had this massive square jaw. So he looked very intimidating. And so he always played gangsters or, you know, monsters, or showed up in a lot of exploitation movies. This is just straight up an exploitation movie. And it's it has some big names in it. Like I said, it has Robert Zahr, and that kind of put him on the map because they did about 6 of these movies. And Bruce Campbell's in it, you know, of course, from the Evil Dead movies. He had just done Evil Dead 2 when this came out, so he was still pretty early in his sort of genre well-known career. And of course, Tom Atkins is in it. Richard Roundtree plays Shaft himself, plays the, he's the sergeant. I don't think he's the chief. He's the sergeant at the police station. And this movie, okay, this is one of those movies, and I've described this before. There's a scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where Belloc says to Indiana Jones, here's a pocket watch I bought for a couple bucks from a vendor in the street. It's worthless. But if you bury it in the sand for 10,000 years, it'll become priceless. And that's kind of what these movies are. I think Maniac Cop, when it came out in 1988, was probably just a turd of a film. It was probably god-awful. And I imagine if I saw it back then, I would have been like, yeah, it was okay. It was fun because I liked that kind of exploitation crap when I was in high school. I still do. But if you give yourself, gosh, what are we talking now? Like 35 years or more? And it's sort of buried in the vast wastelands of the video desert. And you resurrect it and you look at it. Yeah, it's terrible and it's exploitative and it has every cliche in the book. But doggone it if it's not fun to watch. And it's better than something like Vice Squad, which is just a little on the nose and a little almost depressingly exploitative. But putting in this element of supernatural about them, there's something either otherworldly or beyond the dead or something. You know from the moment he shows up that it's just not a normal dude. And that gives it a little extra spice. And that's kind of what makes it entertaining. And all the, I mean, the characters are bad people and they're bad characters and it's bad dialogue. And it, I mean, it literally looks like Tom Atkins walked from the production of Night of the Creeps to this. I mean, it's the same Tom Atkins character, trench coat, mustachioed. It's not a good movie, but doggone if it's not a fun movie. I mean, it's dripping in 80s exploitation tropes. But this gritty crime thriller revels in its era with enough horror elements to make it unique. Have to say, Maniac Cop kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Arthur and the King and One Life. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.